Blog Talk Radio.
Tell us what it is.
The debate drinking game.
Yes, that's why we're cutting out here an hour, a half hour early.
So all of us can sit back and watch and hopefully see the same kind of beatdown that Joe Biden put on on Paul Ryan last week.
Right. Okay. So the funniest tweet was Bill Maher. 911, help. There's an old man beating a child on my television. And that summed up the night.
It was really Paul Ryan's fault, however, because just like when you are sitting around a bunch of relatives and as an adult you have older relatives that you let talk so you can hear words of wisdom they have to partake or impart to you or let you know, even if you sometimes don't believe what they have to say, and you sit there, but you, out of respect, listen to what they have to say, and then some child, some parent who lets their child be precocious has the nerve to step up and say something. Crazy Uncle Joe went off on him.
Beat him like he stole something.
Crazy Uncle Joe hit him with the
never
Jack Kennedy
before.
Lowered tax rates, increased growth. Ronald
oh,
Reagan.
Oh, now you're Jack Kennedy.
Ronald Reagan.
Oh, so now you want to say shit. Now you want to say shit, right?
Right. He hit him with the facts. He did.
He hit him with the facts. And the line that came out of that whole debate last Wednesday was the line that should be the theme of this debate tonight for the Democrats and President Obama and going forward to Election Day. Facts matter.
Facts matter. I mean, and he was just hitting him with body blow after body blow. I mean, what about the Afghan statement? You know, when Paul Ryan, and I think I understand what Paul Ryan was trying to say, but it still didn't make any sense. And so, and Joe was like, oh, you want to put more of our troops in harm's way? Is that what you're saying?
Right. So let me get this straight. You don't want to put Americans to work over here, but you want them to work over there doing the work that Afghans should be doing.
Right, and that was Joe's point. And I think what Ryan was trying to say is to build up the troops until the Afghan soldiers are all trained up and then just swoop them, you know, everybody out at the same time and put the Afghans in instead of, you know, daisy chaining it. But what Biden said made perfect sense because that's not what they're doing and they're not going to go back and do that. So your other option is to throw more people over there, more cannon fodder. Got it. Heard you. And I'm bouncing all over the place, but that's how my brain works. And what about his six-point plan? I mean, his tax plan that's accredited by six other reputable analysts. It's four blog posts, right, and two articles written by Romney surrogates. So those are the six people who agree with your tax plan? Since when are blog posts considered reputable, you know, opinions in something that tremendous?
Well, because the Republicans are still learning how the interwebs work.
They didn't think anybody was going to check.
You have to remember that it was a blogger who brought Sarah Palin to the attention of the John McCain campaign.
And they ain't learned their lesson yet?
No, because she is a leader in the party. She's a power broker. She controls the mood of those who can't read.
And are deaf in one ear.
Right.
So they only hear half the truth.
The truth,
wow,
as it is fed to them. But yeah, Uncle Joe took Paul Ryan out behind the woodshed and beat the snot out of him. Hit him
upside the head. Beat him. And when he looked in the camera and said, "Who are you going to trust, America?" You know, you and I were tweeting and Facebooking, and I was like, "I believe you, Uncle Joe. Me. I trust you. Me." And, you know, I mean, while we're talking about that, you and I have some very, very witty friends. And some of the stuff they were saying had me on my back.
Mm.
You guys should follow us on Twitter and Facebook, because besides Yale and myself, our friends are just as funny and crazy.
Yeah, well, I'm Nightlifer Online if you want to follow me on Twitter. And Kamal is, I just started drinking like a fish. So
I'm queen of all she's surveys. Drunk. No, I'm the diva, THEDIVUH, because AH was taken, so I'm diva.
Because you're black.
Because I'm black like that. I think across the board we all agree that Joe Biden whomped Ryan. You know, the right is spinning it as, you know, oh, he was just so rude, blah, 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 because he kept laughing. But, you know, it comes to the point, I mean, as a woman, I have been in the situation where a dude is just telling me so many lies that all I can do is laugh. You know, you're like, all right, Negro, whatever. Just whatever, cool. Oh, you wanna pull that one out again? All right, I'm with you. I mean, you know, you laugh to avoid cursing or crying, you know?
Well, because I was born a black child from the ghetto of Baltimore and Columbia, I was yelling at the television set, just like I was at a movie theater. Oh, no, you didn't. Oh, no, you didn't. Oh,
right.
No, he didn't. Did he?
Right.
Yes, he did.
Right. When Joe said, I've had it up to here, what I say? I said, Joe done found his inner Shaniqua. He's the Rue. I mean, it was just, like I said, it was body blow after body blow. And that's how Obama should have brought it to Romney.
Well, you know, you bring up a good point. And let's put this out there right now, because this is the elephant in the room. Honest to goodness, there should be nothing that is said tonight that should sway the opinion of an informed voter about which way they're going to vote.
Right.
You should be looking at these two men and trying to decide, based upon their answers and how they answer the question, how they'll react in terms, in times of stress and national security and times of the nation needing a response, a quick response from the leader. And, you know, one of the things I took away from last week's vice presidential debate is, if Romney becomes president and something happens to him, the Secret Service should immediately lock Paul Ryan in a closet, because
a broom closet.
He was clueless.
Yeah, he's not ready for prime time at all. And
no.
And this little slick talking he does, and these vague answers, and these just ignoring questions and pushing forth what he wants to say, is not going to work much longer. You know, you and I watch C-SPAN, so we already know how he rolls. But the American public is finally getting to see how he just, you know, he'll just act like you didn't even ask that question and just keep going on with what he was saying, even if it's, you know, he's called on, I need more information. How many times did Martha ask him for the math?
Right. And how many times did he ignore it?
Zero plus zero is zero.
How about near the end of the debate when she said to him, she said to both candidates, the tone of this election has gotten to be so divisive that she met a veteran who was pretty much disgusted with it, and what do they think about the tone, and what are they going to do to try to change it? And Paul Ryan went right into hate speak. Like, yeah, it's bad. But these people over here, they're not worthy of your vote, and they try to do this and do that. I'm like, really? Hold up. Wait a minute.
Right. You need to say what you're going to do, not what the others are not going to do.
Right, and stop you know, I'm really sick of it on both sides, even though you can't tell me it's not worse on the Republican side.
No, you can't, you know. You saw those pictures I posted of just the blatant racism.
Yes. And then, you know, while we're going to talk about that, we also have to talk about the fact that Joe Biden, according to Fox News or Faux News, was mean, and he was mean spirited, and
didn't they say off his meds?
Yeah, they said off his meds, and he needs to be on meds, and he was angry, and he just beat up on Paul Ryan, and it was so okay. So you think Paul Ryan has to sit in front of the president of ooh, Becky Stan
999?
This man is going to be lobbed up softballs for him to hit back.
Right, and you know what? And I'm going to age myself, but he's like Eddie Haskell. Doesn't he remind you of Eddie Haskell?
He reminded me more of the
Eddie Munster because of the Widow Peak. But, I mean, just his attitude, that smarmy, always smirking. I just want to punch him in the face.
Yeah, I don't have a violent reaction toward him like I do with Glenn Beck or Rush Limbaugh. But I just look at him like, you're kidding me. I can't believe he said that. Look, we have a caller, and I want to make sure, see if this call has anything to say, because, you know, nowadays we have to always check and see if we have people who actually want to participate or just want to listen. Caller calling in from the 302 area code. I think I know who you are. Do you have anything to say?
Hi. What do I have
nope.
to say? I have to say I hope my president gets on television and puts foot in the rear, calls a spade, a liar, and uppercuts him like he's by the butt.
Well, it's clear that he has to do better and come stronger than he did in the first debate.
Well, he does. Well, the first debate, it seemed like he was so busy being presidential that he wasn't focusing on this dude's trying to take my job, and I know he's not going to do the best thing for the people. I'm going to come out and I'm going to behave while they expect a president to carry himself instead of carrying it like somebody who is fighting for his people. And I think that's where he made his mistake.
Well, a very wise person posted on Facebook, a very insightful person posted on Facebook, that was virtually a catch-22 situation for Barack Obama. He could not come hard like Joe Biden did, because Joe Biden caught crap from certain, I'm going to say the society, but had Barack Obama as a black man come as hard as Biden did,
thank
he would have
been an angry Negro.
Angry Negro.
He was an angry Negro with a chip on his shoulder, and that he was trying to make the country pay for all the 25 years of slavery, and that's how they would have formed it. So he wasn't a catch-22, but he still seemed to be too presidential and not enough fighting for the common people, and the way that he responded. Not even how he responded, but was some of the questions that he asked. Some of the questions that he asked of Mitt Romney, he allowed him to just get away with not answering them. And you can't do that.
Well, that was on the moderator. You know, and as long as we're talking about the moderator, I got to hand it to Jim Lehrer, because he remained alive during the debate, even though I thought he died halfway through it.
No, I thought that he was very calm, cool, and collected when someone in your face tells you they want to take all the funding for your job. Because I'd have been on call. I was like, really? Oh, it's about to get busy in here. But he was very calm. He was very cool. He was very collected, and he didn't address that statement, which I said to me, not sure. better moderator for something like this, because at least with the vice presidential one, she spoke up and said, hey, wait a minute, before we move forward, you need to address such and such. And even though they continue to skip around, and Paul Ryan skipped around some things, she did try to go back and reiterate that some things were not answered. And Jim Ware didn't do that. He just kind of let them just ramble on and then go on to the next question without, you know, trying to pull or navigate through the jump to an actual answer.
Well, that's true. That's actually true. And the thing that struck me about that is, after a while, it got so bad that she beat up on Paul Ryan, too, because he was not answering the questions, and some of his answers just didn't make any sense. They were not in any way, shape, or form realistic, and she held him on it.
She did.
Well, I personally think he was wearing the pants, first of all. All the way he was drinking, I know how the bladder can hold. He had to have had a Depends on during that entire thing, as much water as he was drinking, because he was so nervous because he didn't know what to say.
Right, and you know what? That showed his weakness. You can't be in front of Putin drinking water every 10 seconds and showing how nervous you are. He ain't ready for prime time. And I loved how Martha brought in that abortion question. So, ladies,
yeah.
Now
I like
you know.
The question. I didn't like how she made it refer to their specific religion. I think she should have made it broad. And not just say Catholic. I think she should have made your religious background not specifically say Catholic. So I do like how she made that point to differentiate how they would handle it based
well,
on their religion.
I don't think she should have brought religion into it at all, personally. However, I did appreciate the pro-life and pro-choice question she asked.
Well, you know,
I think that was trying to show that these Republicans are going to try to govern your life based on their individual religious beliefs. I think that's what she was trying to go with it.
Oh, not govern your life, honey. Govern your uterus.
Well, you know, I think religion had to be a part of it based on them both being Catholics.
But you know what, I'm so sick
Catholic,
of it.
Right, the Catholic Church and Catholic charities and Catholic hospitals were the ones feeling like they were being dictated to by the health plan. And I think Joe Biden answered it wonderfully when he said, my religion is my religion and I hold it dear, but I don't think it's my place to force my beliefs on anybody.
Right, and that was a kick-ass answer.
Yeah, it was.
So one of the questions we were asked was, you know, what do we think each candidate has to do tonight to win over, you know, that bastion of undecided voters that are still out there. And my thought is, you know, one of them has to stop lying and one of them has to start telling the truth. And that's just the bottom line. Romney needs to quit this lying, and Obama needs to start touting everything that he's done and just lay it out there. That's what's going to do it. You know, don't be afraid to say you got Bin Laden's head in the freezer. Matter of fact, whip it out. Just right there. Point to it and drop the mic. End of the foreign policy discussion.
Well, you also have to look at it like this. From a foreign policy standpoint, Biden's years in office, years studying foreign policy, years and expertise in foreign policy is not something you can learn in a one term or second term of being in the Senate. And when you come into the Senate with an agenda of not helping the democratically appointed, elected president.
That buster ain't even in the Senate. He's in the House.
In the House, I'm sorry. Yeah, your two-year terms. When you're elected with the mandate that I'm not going to help this man, but I'll sign off on anything the Republican president who who preceded him came up with, then you're disingenuous.
You're thoroughly disingenuous. And you know what? Don't even look at Ryan's record for the past 4 years, because we know what his agenda is. He's been in Congress since 1998. What has he done? What did he do between 1998 and 2008? Nothing. Nothing. He was a nobody. He was a nobody wasting away in nobody committees until they put him on the budget committee. And he's, you know, and all the stuff in the budget committee, he didn't really become noted for until he was in direct opposition to Barack Obama. So he's a novice and he's inexperienced. I don't care if he's been there, you know, 14 years or whatever at this point. He hasn't done anything.
I've got a caller here from area code 314. I'd like to hear what this caller has to say. Caller, what would you like to say?
Oh, this is a Pianchi. How you doing? Ryan has had more experience in federal government than Obama does.
And?
Well, she said that he was, I think your host said that that Ryan was what? A nobody or something like that. That's not.
Yeah, he was a nobody in terms of what he was doing in the House.
Well,
he's been a congressman since 1998. However, what's his record from 98 to 2008? He was on nobody's radar doing nothing.
What state you live in?
I live in Washington State.
Washington D.C. or Washington State?
Washington State.
Oh, up in the north northwest.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, apparently the people in his district enjoy him because.
Yes, the people in his
district. He does a lot.
Well, you know what?
Wait a minute. Well, you know what, caller? This is an interesting point that you bring up, and I'm glad you said it because it goes to prove the enigma that is today's politics. Congress as a whole has an approval rating of what?
9%.
But locally, everyone across the country, across the board, approves of the job that their representatives are doing.
And he represents a very, very small and rural town, city. I'll call it a city.
That's because he brings back bacon to their district.
Right, and how
fine,
do you get that?
But he's still
how
a nobody.
Ask for stimulus.
Pardon me.
He asked for stimulus money from the president and this administration that he's now bashing. Stimulus didn't work. It wasn't good enough yet.
Well, the stimulus actually has been in two different instances
for stimulus money to help his constituents.
Right.
Yeah. Stimulus haven't been good enough, but, you know, stimulus is typical things that governments do when they find themselves in predicaments like they are. Now, we've done the same thing after World War II. We've done the same thing after the Korean War. So, they spend money trying to get things moving, but
that doesn't change the fact that he said, you know, he wasn't going to take the stimulus money and voted against it and did this, that, and the other, and then turned around and had his hand out. And I still stand by my point that he's a nobody. You know, I watch C-SPAN daily, and I'm talking about people who are the movers and shakers, who are authoring bills and really out there working. I never saw him do any of that stuff.
Go ahead, Paul. Make your point.
Yeah, apparently he's doing something. Now, you know, like we talk about Romney. Like,
Jesse
Owens
was doing something.
Obama lies also now. We can't say that. Politicians lie, period. Obama lies also.
Right, all politicians lie. But to what degree?
Definition, politicians lie.
Well, absolutely they do.
Oh, yeah,
however,
I'm not disputing that. Compare Obama's lies to Romney's lies.
Compare Obama's lies to Romney's lies?
Yes, please do.
Well,
and notice,
Obama
and please note that when Romney opens up his mouth and says hello, he's lying.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, I haven't yet to see a politician out debate a business person. I've been around a long time. They just don't do it because they bring back, a business person has comes from a position that a politician. See, the business people have power over politicians, and they know that. They can lay off a whole bunch of folks when time comes. You look at your banks. Obama was supposed to be very friendly doing so much for the banks. But your J.P. Morgans, your Morgan Stanley's, your Chase, your Bank of America, they are throwing their money at Romney. They're not throwing any money at Obama.
Right.
So
and you know why they're throwing money at Obama? I mean, at Romney, not Obama?
Because they know once he gets in office, he will take care of them.
Well, he would. I mean, that's a general statement, which is true. But the real reason, I mean, the precise reason is they know Romney will not be for regulating the banks back to the controls that we had post George W. Bush
and Glass-Steagall.
Post Bill Clinton. I mean, sorry, pre George W. Bush and pre Bill Clinton that led to the financial crisis that we had in 2008.
Well, you know, the banks that Obama bailed out threw money in on this side of the pond, and he threw money over in the European banks. They're owned by the same people.
True.
Obama
but
comes
who,
from Chicago. Chicago is a banker's town.
Who? So is Delaware. Who authored the first bank bailout?
Well, Bush did.
Thank you. So why does no one say Bush bailed out, tried to bail out the banks to help, but Obama's bailout for the banks was unnecessary?
Well, people complain about the Bush spending. There's a whole sorts of complaint about it. They never have seen Republicans lately spend the type of money that George Bush
did. And George Bush was what before he was a politician?
George Bush was a governor.
He was
before he was a politician. I didn't say before he was president. I said before he was a politician.
He was a business person. Always
Thanks.
Have been.
He was a business person who was horrible at business. Horrible. His only
you don't have no argument with me about that. He was. He drilled a lot of dry holes too.
Yes, he did. But and he drank a lot of bars dry.
Yeah.
However, he was able to become governor of Texas, which Perry should tell you that's not a hard goal to attain.
Yeah.
And then he parlayed that into becoming president of the United States. It doesn't prove or disprove either way that a businessman is better or worse than a novice politician to become president.
Well, one that has a record behind them. You know, you have to have anybody become a business person. Look at black businesses. Blacks have 1.9 million businesses, and they hire less than a million employees. So that and 87% of their business gross less than $50,000 a year. So if you just look at and say, well, would a black make a good president? Well, if you look at their business record, you'd have to say no.
Well, see, this is the theory that I love to debunk and I love to talk to people about on both sides of the aisle, and it's clear to me that you're not on the same side of the aisle that we're on. But the thought and idea that a businessman can come into the federal government and make things better is a false premise. If you've ever worked in the private sector and ever worked in the government sector at different times in your life, the government does not function like a business. It should, but it doesn't, and it can't. As I've said on this show several times, there are too many layers of complexity and bureaucracy between the president, between management and government, and the people who do things in the government for it to happen.
Well, you look.
It can't. So for you to say that Romney will come in. And, or any business person will come in and make things better because they're a successful businessman. First of all, you can't just come in and fire people in the government like you can in your own business. You just can't come in and affect change immediately like you can in the government. It can't happen because there's just too many layers. This is why government spending is out of control, because if you want to order a paperclip, you work for the government, you've got to fill out procurement records, you've got to get clearance, you've got to go through the GPO, you've got to put out bids.
You would admit the government spend too much money then, right?
Huh?
I say you do admit the government spend too much money, correct?
Right, and they do because of that, for things like that.
Well, see, now we're on the same side on that particular aspect. The government spends way too much money.
Well, it spends way too much money, but it's a proven fact that Obama has reduced deficit further than George Bush ever did.
No, Obama in his 3 years has spent just as much as George Bush did in his 8 years.
No, it's a proven fact that he has reduced the deficit. It's proven.
And
Clinton reduced the deficit more than Reagan did. And
Clinton reduced the deficit, but the debt. When Clinton left office, the U.S. debt was $5.7 trillion.
Well, you know, with Clinton, you think about Clinton. Clinton was more pragmatic, and Clinton had a clear mandate of a government that wasn't in default, a government that wasn't falling apart, but a government that was in transition.
Hmm. When Bush, from January 19, 2001 to January 19, 2009, 8 years, Bush spent $4.9 trillion. From January the 19th, 2009, to March the 19th, 2012, Obama has spent $4.97 trillion.
And how much of that was he spending, and how much of that was he putting visibility on the books? Because there was a lot of stuff, i.e. the war, that George Bush kept off the books.
No, the war was on the books.
It was off
The war was on the books. However, the war was not paid for. So a lot of things, and you have a valid point that I hear all the time but people don't want to admit, is that George Bush did not, and the Congress that was in place and under George Bush's presidency, there was no payment allocated for or made for those two wars during Bush's administration. So the money that you are counting against Obama, which is right, is also money that he's using to pay for the wars that George Bush started and the prescription plan for seniors. So a lot of that money is George Bush's money. And you have to spend your way out of the economic crisis that he inherited. So if we count those three line items,
In 2004,
that Obama spent, and then give me a number.
In 2004, something happened here.
2004, that was the election.
Well, that was the election of Bush's second term.
Right,
and I'm not taking up for George Bush. And yes, Obama did come in at a period of time when this nation was going through something I think it had no business being in at all. Even though you mentioned something about Bin Laden, Bin Laden was killed for about the 10th time this last time. So,
what do you mean by that?
Bin Laden supposedly had died before.
That's
propaganda.
They thought he was dead.
No, why would it be propaganda? You had the candidate for president, Boudicheur Azira. She mentioned that Bin Laden had died, and she had no reason to be lying. You know, she ended up being assassinated shortly after that herself.
Hold on a second.
She was candidate for president of what country?
Pakistan.
And you said she had no reason to lie? Bin Laden?
She didn't have any lie. She didn't have any reason to tell a lie.
Where was Bin Laden found?
Pardon me.
Where was Bin Laden found?
Bin Laden was supposedly this last time been found in Pakistan.
Right outside of the retirement community for all the Pakistani military.
Well, that's what they say. But all I'm saying is that they had said that Bin Laden had been dead before. And, of course, you know, the FBI reports in 9/11 said Bin Laden was not a suspect.
Right. And because he wasn't a suspect, he was allowed to do what he did. And we can relitigate this history if you want to real quick, because I have conspiracy theorists that I talk to almost daily about this, and none of them can dispute the one simple fact that George W. Bush said that he was no more concerned about Bin Laden. To him, he was no longer a concern. So he gave him a pass. Therefore, he did not try to keep the fact that he was alive in front of the American people. The people who were responsible for allowing those attacks to happen did not want bin Laden to be alive or to say he was alive. But everyone knows, I haven't heard a single conspiracy theorist yet who can follow straight logic can dispute that bin Laden was on the battlefield, and the American troops, by subcontracting the battle out to the Taliban, the anti-Taliban fighters, allowed him to get out of that valley and escape.
Well, you know who helped create the Taliban, right?
We helped create the Al-Qaeda. We didn't help create the Taliban.
We helped create the Taliban too. Hillary Clinton's on record saying that. We helped create the Taliban when they were fighting Russia. I should say the Soviet Union at that period of time.
I've never heard Hillary say that. Can you point me in the correct direction?
I sure can.
Let's keep the show going on.
One thing that Pianki's not going to say something he can't prove.
Okay. Well, what Hillary did say was that the United States supported the Taliban because the Taliban, when they came to power, were all about burning the poppy fields and stopping the exportation of opium from that country. So they came in looking like one thing and ended up being something else.
I wasn't trying to question your integrity. I honestly have never heard it and wanted to read up on it myself.
Right here. You got a chat room?
She doesn't have a chat room right now.
Yeah, I put it there. Yeah, she said it. But that's nothing new. The U.S. and Britain and America made the Third Reich. So, you know, these things happen all the time. It's the people that's dumb. Americans are not smart. They're very dumb.
Now, I've heard that Winston Churchill was responsible for the Middle East being divided up into the countries it is now. I've heard that the League of Nations was responsible for the reindustrialization of Germany after World War One. But I've never heard that the United States and England was responsible for the Third Reich. Now, you're a little bit older than they were. But I also never heard that there was stimulus for this country after World War II. After World War II, we became such an industrialized nation and an assembly line nation that jobs became very plentiful. There was no need to pump money into the economy. The money was there.
Yeah, and the same players then were the same names that pop up today, especially when you get to talking about the Morgans and so forth. And, you know, we shouldn't be arguing back and forth on each other on politics because it's something, you know, I've lived through Reagan. And I remember
she's only 25. She didn't live through Reagan.
I remember articles in Black Enterprise where blacks would say, how will we ever survive Reagan? And
right.
You can go read that today. So the thing is with African Americans is that our politics is no more better than what we pay for. And the fact that we don't have businesses is the reason why our politics are lousy. You know, you just can't continue to vote for people without being able to issue demands. And that's what we find ourselves in. And you really want to look at it. Black unemployment has been under 10% more months under Republican presidents than they have a Democratic president, including Clinton. George Bush had black unemployment under 10% during his time more months than Clinton did.
Are you talking Herbert Walker or W?
The last one.
I dispute
Bush,
that.
The last Bush and Nixon.
By Nixon, I don't buy W. Bush. But I do agree with you. You say that blacks should be more accountable or should make the elected officials more accountable. Everyone comes to Black America for votes when they want to be elected. Everyone forgets about Black America after they win the election.
Oh, sure. And really, Democrats are pushing blacks to the side and going for the Hispanics. And, I mean, just Well, just the numbers. They have the numbers for one reason. See, we don't lose a lot of numbers through a lot of, not only from disenfranchisement, but also abortion. Since 1973 to 2005, you don't had 18 million babies aborted. How many votes would that equate to?
Oh,
and
okay.
It's not saying that the conditions that exist, why that has to happen, is something we have never put as much attention to as we should. And
I don't want to debate
poverty
on this show. I would love to have you come back and do it on another show and when we have more time. But
well, I'm not doing abortion. Remember, I said also disenfranchisement.
Right,
where you
right,
have
right.
so many people in.
Well,
prison.
You know, I think it's a stretch to equate abortion, children that never will be, to voting numbers. That doesn't set well with me at all.
Well, when your numbers is you know, like in Mississippi, and just this last month they said that the black women make up 42% of those that's being aborted. And that, I mean, there's something wrong with that. That needs to be addressed. And like you said, your program isn't on that, but, you know, when
we
you
go
through
back.
A whole...
We can come back and do
this.
Right, we can come back and do it. And when we address it, I would like to address the responsibility of the men in these scenarios, because it's not all on the women.
Why? Men don't make babies. We don't have babies. That's
you know
all
what?
Y'all.
You know
That's
what?
All y'all.
Shut up.
Putting your junk out there for us.
But,
see, thank you,
Yale.
Thank you for that. No, he was being facetious, Keontae. Now, see, Yale, be serious. Now,
I'm asking,
why would I have to be this as you said?
I'm sorry, what?
Why would I have to be facetious?
No, she was talking about
me. No, I was saying Yale was being facetious.
And I was being facetious.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Right.
Now,
he was being facetious when he was saying, I don't have no babies. No, if we're going to talk about abortion and the rates of abortion, we need to talk about the male accountability in the equation as well.
In all races.
In all races.
Yeah, but it affects us more. I mean, I don't like to include everybody else. I mean, we can't include them in our standing of wealth attainment, so we shouldn't include them in our standings, the status in the stats when we talk about, you know, deplorable things that we find ourselves in. Because they don't do that. They don't. I never hear other ethnic groups say us Latinos and blacks are us. Cuban Americans and blacks, you know, surely Cuban Americans ain't saying that.
Well, I don't know what they're saying and what they're not saying, but, you know, if we're going to talk about the abortion issue, we need to include everybody.
Right. Well, Pianki, I appreciate your call. And when we put up the show about abortion, which will probably be after the election because the election is hot right now. We'd love to have you come back and offer your input, and please feel free to comment.
You know,
call
real
in
quick
about those.
In 2000, the federal tax revenue was $1.98 trillion, and the federal spending is $1.8 trillion. So they had like $212 billion in
surplus.
Budget surplus
in 2000.
The U.S. national, huh? Yeah, it was 2000.
2000.
Defense and wars was $309 billion at that time. That clock is still ticking, by the way.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Yeah. But I would like for, you know, young people, young voters, and, you know, young blacks to look at these debt issues and begin to understand them a little bit more, because in the long run, they're going to really affect you. Because when you have today your unfunded liabilities are $120 trillion, and that consists of Social Security, that consists of Medicare, and that consists of prescription drugs. That's things that people have paid for and they expect to receive. Now, what happens when people go to get something that ain't there and they paid for it?
Yeah.
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 Okay.
Okay, so we will see you on another show, hopefully, but definitely on the show for when we do the abortion issue.
All right. Well, I keep looking out for your topics then. So you guys have a pleasant day, and you, young lady, you have a pleasant evening also.
Thank you. We're going to watch the debate. I hope you're going to watch it too.
So, interesting viewpoint from Mississippi.
Yeah.
Mississippi's a fine state with a lot of I's and S's in it.
Indeed.
Indeed.
And a couple, so, and a couple of P's.
A few P's. There's a few P's. I know there's only one M. There's only one M. So, Kamal, your old friend, is back in town to switch gears. Your old friend who was away for a week came back in town this week.
I know. He took out three.
Global warming is back, ladies and gentlemen.
Arlen Specter came
to talk to him.
Little cat that was in Last Dragon, little nine-year-old, he was nine in Last Dragon, or 10, and I believe that's when his career peaked. He got a visit from Old Man Reaper, Global Warming, and we lost Arlen Specter. The great former senator from the state of Pennsylvania, who switched sides. Remember that?
He was a rhino. Arlen Specter was...
He was a rhino, and then he completely switched parties. And he was so sick of Bush's crap.
Remember, Arlen Specter started out as a Democrat, became a
Republican. A long time ago. That's right, and he became a Republican in the 70s.
Right. Arlen Specter never saw an issue he didn't want to be reelected over.
But you know what, though? I'm going to miss his voice. He reminded me so much of W.C. Fields, where he would just I'm just trying to figure out what you're saying. I loved his voice. I could sit there and watch him talk for hours and just giggle.
Well, Arlen Specter also had the great line when Bill Maher asked him about how old he was, and Arlen Specter said he didn't remember. He looked back at his birth certificate and figured that year was so long ago, why bother trying to add it up? So,
right. But he said, I don't know. I'm going to have to look at my birth certificate. So, old man global warming just kicking people out. Kicking people to the curb left and right.
Now, a lot of people going to make it. A lot of people have not made it to 2013 and won't make it to 2013.
Right.
You
know what? I would start a Deadpool if I didn't think it was so morbid. But in my head, I have a few people I think are on the list this year.
There are a few people on the list that have not checked out yet. And there are some people who we weren't expecting to check out who have left us. I fully expected the man who jumped out of the hot air balloon on Sunday to join the ranks of the 2012 global warming victims.
Yeah, what about the guy that jumped from space? How did he get up there?
That's what I'm saying. He was in a hot air balloon.
He got a modified hot air balloon
up 24 miles. And then
hot air balloons went that high.
Well, it's not just like a balloon that's like Mitt Romney breathed into.
I know that. But, you know, I just thought that the atmosphere, because, like, isn't the atmosphere, like, really, really, like, ice cold up there?
Extremely cold, yes. Extremely cold and very thin.
Right. And so I just didn't think, you know, you could safely get up there. I didn't think a balloon would go that high, and I didn't think you could safely get up there in a balloon.
Yeah, you can.
Apparently.
Actually, it just didn't, they just set the mark at 24 miles. They set the
what happened to the balloon?
I believe the balloon is headed toward the sun, where it will probably be killed by global warming. No, the balloon is brought back down in a controlled descent, probably.
Oh.
I thought it's scientific stuff that I didn't pay attention to when I was in school.
Right.
But I did pay attention to the fact that I'm not jumping out of a hot air balloon. I don't care if it's 4 inches off the ground.
Yeah,
but
I'm not too keen on that either.
I say, and people know me, know what I mean when I say this, I keep saying that white people keep finding things to do that they know black people will never, ever beat them on. We're not going to jump. First of all, we're not going to go up 24 miles in a hot air balloon. And if we get up there, we're going to come down with a hot air balloon. We're not going to jump out of it. This record will stay a white man's record.
I have no comment. No, I have nothing.
Somebody black from Mississippi decides that they want to try it. Just can't get high enough.
Yes, or maybe too high.
Or too high. But look, we should have started the show with this, and I want to apologize to our listening audience, which is approaching 14,000, in case you haven't checked lately.
Yay! But you know what? It's like 8:59.
Yeah, well, we've got a few minutes, 3 minutes. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
Yes.
Okay. Ladies, black, white, yellow, brown, please get checked.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm going to tell the truth just this one time. I'm 42. Okay, now I'm back to 25. But because I said I was 42, when I went to the doctor, I found out that I had to get a mammogram. I thought I didn't have to get one until I was 50. But apparently, when you cross over and become 42/25, you have to get a mammogram. So do that. It hurts just for a minute, and then the pain is gone. But you should also be giving yourselves self-examinations. If you don't know how to do that, I'm not a qualified professional, so I really can't tell you. With confidence. I mean, you know, I follow the little diagram. You know, you raise your arm over your head, and then you take your other hand and you pat around your breast and feel for lumps. That's the diagram that I have. But also make sure you get your yearly examination. You know, once a year you go to your gyno, and as part of your visit, have your gyno give you a manual exam on the breast, and also schedule your mammogram with the they call it like, I don't know, in Washington they call it the breast health clinic. And, yeah, you get squished. But getting squished, you know, being, you know, uncomfortable and a little pain for a minute and a half is well worth it, because you don't want to. And African-American women especially, I found this out. African-American women are more prone to breast cancer than any other races. So black women, you too, make doubly sure that you schedule your mammograms.
And if you, like myself, have lost a loved one or have a loved one that is fighting or has fought and survived this disease, my prayers and love go out to you. This Sunday, I participate in the Susan G. Komen Walk for the Race for the Cure in memory of a woman who I love dearly, Miss Delmonica Hines, my close bestie. And I miss her every day, and I know her children and her family miss her every day and love her. And for all the other women who have suffered through this and all the people who have lost loved ones, our prayers and love go out to you as well. So listen,
right.
America.
Cool. It's time to start our drinking game.
That's right. And let's all pay attention tonight.
I got my red Moscato, I got my white Moscato, and I got my pink Moscato. I'm ready to go.
If you don't, else, America.
All right, 30 seconds to the bait. Bye, America.
Mitt Romney takes. Can you tell me how to get to Sesame Street? have to make sure and